It was too bad that, with all my brooding, I'd forgotten to wreck the car. Oh well, I probably wouldn't have been able to stand hurting this car anyway. Maybe he'd guessed as much, and that's why he'd lent it to me in the first place. "A few things, Jacob," he said as soon as I cut the engine. I took a deep breath and held it for a minute. Then slowly, I got out of the car and threw the keys to him. "Thanks for the loan," I said sourly. Apparently, it would have to be repaid. "What do you want now?"
"Firstly, I know how averse you are to using your authority with your pack, but..."
I blinked, astonished that he would even dream of starting in on this one. "What?"
"If you can't or won't control Leah, then I..."
"Leah?" I interrupted, speaking through my teeth. "What happened?" Edward's face was hard.
"She came up to see why you'd left so abruptly. I tried to explain. I suppose it might not have come out right."
"What did she do?"
"She phased to her human form and..."
"Really?" I interrupted again, shocked this time. I couldn't process that. Leah letting her guard down right in the mouth of the enemy's lair?
"She wanted to speak to Bella."
"To Bella?" Edward got all hissy then.
"I won't let Bella be upset like that again. I don't care how justified Leah thinks she is. I didn't hurt her. Of course I wouldn't. But I'll throw her out of the house if it happens again. I'll launch her right across the river."
"Hold on. What did she say?" None of this was making any sense. Edward took a deep breath, composing himself.
"Leah was unnecessarily harsh. I'm not going to pretend that I understand why Bella is unable to let go of you, but I do know that she does not behave this way to hurt you. She suffers a great deal over the pain she's inflicting on you, and on me, by asking you to stay. What Leah said was uncalled for. Bella's been crying."
"Wait. Leah was yelling at Bella about me?"
He nodded one sharp nod. "You were quite vehemently championed."
"Whoa. I didn't ask her to do that."
"I know."
I rolled my eyes. Of course he knew. He knew everything. But that was really something about Leah. Who would have believed it? Leah walking into the bloodsucker's place human to complain about how I was being treated?
"I can't promise to control Leah," I told him. "I won't do that. But I'll talk to her, okay? And I don't think there'll be a repeat. Leah's not one to hold back, so she probably got it all off her chest today."
"I would say so. Anyway, I'll talk to Bella about it too. She doesn't need to feel bad. This one's on me."
"I already told her that."
"Of course you did. Is she okay?"
"She's sleeping now. Rose is with her."
So the psycho was Rose now. He'd completely crossed over to the dark side. He ignored that thought, continuing with a more complete answer to my question.
"She's better in some ways, aside from Leah's tirade and the resulting guilt."
"Better, because Edward was hearing the monster and everything was all lovey-dovey now. Fantastic."
"It's a bit more than that," he murmured. "Now that I can make out the child's thoughts, it's apparent that he or she has remarkably developed mental facilities. He can understand us to an extent."
My mouth fell open. "Are you serious?"
"Yes. He seems to have a vague sense of what hurts her now. He's trying to avoid that as much as possible. He loves her. Already."
I stared at Edward, feeling sort of like my eyes might pop out of their sockets. Underneath that disbelief, I could see right away that this was the critical factor. This was what had changed Edward, that the monster had convinced him of this love. He couldn't hate what loved Bella. It was probably why he couldn't hate me either. There was a big difference, though. I wasn't killing her. Edward went on, acting like he hadn't heard all that.
"The progress, I believe, is more than we judged. When Carlyle returns..."
"They're not back?" I cut in sharply. I thought of Sam and Jared watching the road. Would they get curious as to what was going on?
"Alice and Jasper are. Carlyle sent all the blood he was able to acquire. but it wasn't as much as he was hoping for. Bella will use up this supply in another day, the way her appetite has grown. Carlyle stayed to try another source. I don't think that's necessary now, but he wants to be covered for any eventuality.
Why isn't it necessary, if she needs more?
I could tell he was watching and listening to my reaction carefully as he explained. I'm trying to persuade Carlyle to deliver the baby as soon as he is back.
What?
The child seems to be attempting to avoid rough movements, but it's difficult. He's become too big. It's madness to wait, when he's clearly developed beyond what Carlyle had guessed. Bella's too fragile to delay.
I kept getting my legs knocked out from under me. First, counting on Edward's hatred of the thing so much. Now I'd realized that I thought of those 4 days as a sure thing. I'd banked on them. The endless ocean of grief that waited stretched out before me. I tried to catch my breath. Edward waited. I stared at his face while I recovered, recognizing another change there.
You think she's going to make it? I whispered.
Yes, that was the other thing I wanted to talk to you about.
I couldn't say anything. After a minute, he went on.
Yes, he said again. Waiting, as we have been, for the child to be ready, that was insanely dangerous. At any moment it could have been too late. But if we're proactive about this, if we act quickly, I see no reason why it should not go well. Knowing the child's mind is unbelievably helpful. Thankfully, Bella and Rose agree with me. Now that I've convinced them it's safe for the child if we proceed, there's nothing to keep this from working.
When will Carlyle be back? I asked, still whispering. I hadn't got my breath back yet.
By noon tomorrow.
My knees buckled. I had to grab the car to hold myself up. Edward reached out like he was offering support, but then he thought better of it and dropped his hands.
I'm sorry, he whispered. I am truly sorry for the pain this causes you, Jacob. Though you hate me, I must admit that I don't feel the same about you. I think of you as a brother, in many ways, a comrade in arms at the very least. I regret your suffering more than you realize.
But Bella is going to survive. When he said that, his voice was fierce, even violent. And I know that's what really matters to you. He was probably right. It was hard to tell. My head was spinning.
So I hate to do this now while you're already dealing with too much, but clearly there's little time. I have to ask you for something, to beg if I must.
I don't have anything left, I choked out.
He lifted his hand again, as if to put it on my shoulder, but then let it drop like before and sighed. I know how much you have given, he said quietly, but this is something you do have, and only you. I'm asking this of the true Alpha, Jacob. I'm asking this of Ephraim's heir.
I was way past being able to respond.
I want your permission to deviate from what we agreed to in our treaty with Ephraim. I want you to grant us an exception. I want your permission to save her life. You know I'll do it anyway, but I don't want to break faith with you if there is any way to avoid it. We never intended to go back on our word, and we don't do it lightly now. I want your understanding, Jacob, because you know exactly why we do this. I want the alliance between our families to survive when this is over.
I tried to swallow. Sam, I thought. It's Sam you want.
No. Sam's authority is assumed. It belongs to you. You'll never take it from him. But no one can rightfully agree to what I'm asking except for you.
It's not my decision.
It is, Jacob, and you know it. Your word on this will condemn us or absolve us. Only you can give this to me.
I can't think. I don't know.
We don't have much time.
He glanced back toward the house. No, there was no time. My few days had become a few hours. I don't know. Let me think. Just give me a minute here, okay?
Yes.
I started walking to the house, and he followed. Crazy how easy it was, walking through the dark with a vampire right beside me. It didn't feel unsafe, or even uncomfortable, really. It felt like walking next to anybody. Well, anybody who smelled bad.
There was a movement in the brush at the edge of the big lawn, and then a low whimper. Seth shrugged through the ferns and loped over to us.
"Hey, kid," I muttered. He dipped his head, and I patted his shoulder.
"It's all cool," I lied. "I'll tell you about it later. Sorry to take off on you like that."
He grinned at me.
"Hey, tell your sister to back off now, okay? Enough."
Seth nodded once. I shoved against his shoulder this time.
"Get back to work. I'll spell you in a bit."
Seth leaned against me, shoving back, and then he galloped into the trees.
He has one of the purest, sincerest, kindest minds I've ever heard, Edward murmured when he was out of sight. You're lucky to have his thoughts to share.
I know that, I grunted.
We started toward the house, and both of our heads snapped up when we heard the sound of someone sucking through a straw. Edward was in a hurry then. He darted up the porch stairs and was gone.
Bella, love, I thought you were sleeping, I heard him say. I'm sorry I wouldn't have left.
Don't worry. I just got so thirsty, it woke me up. It's a good thing Carlisle's bringing more. This kid is going to need it when he gets out of me.
True. That's a good point.
I wonder if he'll want anything else, she mused.
I suppose we'll find out.
I walked through the door.
Alice said,
Finally!
And Bella's eyes flashed to me. That infuriating, irresistible smile broke across her face for 1 second. Then it faltered and her face fell. Her lips puckered like she was trying not to cry. I wanted to punch Leah right in her stupid mouth.
Hey, Bells, I said quickly. How you doing?
I'm fine,
she said.
Big day today, huh? Lots of new stuff.
You don't have to do that, Jacob.
Don't know what you're talking about,
I said, going to sit on the arm of the sofa by her head. Edward had the floor there already. She gave me a reproachful look.
I'm so...
she started to say. I pinched her lips together between my thumb and finger.
Jake,
she mumbled, trying to pull my hand away. Her attempt was so weak it was hard to believe that she was really trying. I shook my head.
You can talk when you're not being stupid.
Fine, I won't say it.
It sounded like she mumbled. I pulled my hand away.
Sorry,
she finished quickly, and then grinned. I rolled my eyes and then smiled back at her. When I stared into her eyes, I saw everything that I'd been looking for in the park. Tomorrow she'd be someone else, but hopefully alive, and that was what counted, right? She'd look at me with the same eyes, sort of. Smile with the same lips, almost. She'd still know me better than anyone who didn't have full access to the inside of my head. Leah might be an interesting companion, maybe even a true friend, someone who would stand up for me. But she wasn't my best friend the way that Bella was. Aside from the impossible love I felt for Bella, there was also that other bond, and it ran bone deep. Tomorrow, she'd be my enemy, or she'd be my ally. And apparently, that distinction was up to me. I sighed.
Fine,
I thought, giving up the very last thing I had to give. It made me feel hollow.
Go ahead. Save her.
As Ephraim's heir, you have my permission, my word, that this will not violate the treaty. The others will just have to blame me. You were right. They can't deny that it's my right to agree to this.
Thank you.
Edward's whisper was low enough that Bella didn't hear anything. But the words were so fervent that, from the corner of my eye, I saw the other vampires turning to stare.
So?
Bella asked, working to be casual.
How was your day?
Great. Went for a drive. Hung out in the park.
Sounds nice.
Sure, sure.
Suddenly she made a face.
Rose?
She asked. I heard Blondie chuckle.
Again? I think I've drunk 2 gallons in the last hour,
Bella explained. Edward and I both got out of the way while Rosalie came to lift Bella from the couch and take her to the bathroom.
Can I walk?
Bella asked.
My legs are so stiff.
Are you sure? Edward asked.
Rose will catch me if I trip over my feet, which could happen pretty easily since I can't see them.
Rosalie set Bella carefully on her feet, keeping her hands right at Bella's shoulders. Bella stretched her arms out in front of her, wincing a little.
That feels good, she sighed. Oh, but I'm huge.
She really was. Her stomach was its own continent.
One more day,
she said, and patted her stomach. I couldn't help the pain that shot through me in a sudden stabbing burst, but I tried to keep it off my face. I could hide it for one more day, right?
All righty then. Whoops! Oh no!
The cup Bella had left on the sofa tumbled to one side, the dark red blood spilling out onto the pale fabric. Automatically, though three other hands beat her there, Bella bent over, reaching out to catch it. There was the strangest, muffled ripping sound from the center of her body.
Oh!
She gasped. And then she went totally limp, slumping toward the floor. Rosalie caught her in the same instant before she could fall. Edward was there too, hands out, the mess on the sofa forgotten. Bella? He asked. And then his eyes unfocused, and panic shot across his features. A half second later, Bella screamed. It was not just a scream, it was a blood-curdling shriek of agony. The horrifying sound cut off with a gurgle, and her eyes rolled back into her head. Her body twitched, arched in Rosalie's arms, and then Bella vomited a fountain of blood. Chapter 18. There are no words for this. Bella's body, streaming with red, started to twitch, jerking around in Rosalie's arms like she was being electrocuted. All the while, her face was blank, unconscious. It was the wild thrashing from inside the center of her body that moved her. As she convulsed, sharp snaps and cracks kept time with the spasms. Rosalie and Edward were frozen for the shortest half second, and then they broke. Rosalie whipped Bella's body into her arms, and shouting so fast it was hard to separate the individual words, she and Edward shot up the staircase to the second floor. I sprinted after them.
Morphine! Edward yelled at Rosalie. Alice, get Carlisle on the phone! Rosalie screeched.
The room I followed them to looked like an emergency ward set up in the middle of a library. The lights were brilliant and white. Bella was on a table under the glare, skin ghostly in the spotlight. Her body flopped, a fish on the sand. Rosalie pinned Bella down, yanking and ripping her clothes out of the way, while Edward stabbed a syringe into her arm. How many times had I imagined her naked? Now I couldn't look. I was afraid to have these memories in my head.
What's happening, Edward?
He's suffocating.
The placenta must have detached.
Somewhere in this, Bella came around. She responded to their words with a shriek that clawed at my eardrums.
Get him out! She screamed. He can't breathe! Do it now!
I saw the red spots pop out when her scream broke the blood vessels in her eyes.
The morphine!
Edward growled.
No! Now!
Another gush of blood choked off what she was shrieking. He held her head up, desperately trying to clear her mouth so that she could breathe again. Alice darted into the room and clipped a little blue earpiece under Rosalie's hair. Then Alice backed away, her gold eyes wide and burning, while Rosalie hissed frantically into the phone. In the bright light, Bella's skin seemed more purple and black than it was white. Deep red was seeping beneath the skin over the huge, shuddering bulge of her stomach. Rosalie's hand came up with a scalpel.
Let the morphine spread! Edward shouted at her. There's no time! Rosalie hissed. He's dying!
Her hand came down on Bella's stomach, and vivid red spouted out from where she pierced the skin. It was like a bucket being turned over, a faucet twisted to full. Bella jerked but didn't scream. She was still choking. And then Rosalie lost her focus. I saw the expression on her face shift, saw her lips pull back from her teeth and her black eyes glint with thirst.
No, Rose!
Edward roared. But his hands were trapped, trying to prop Bella upright so she could breathe. I launched myself at Rosalie, jumping across the table without bothering to phase. As I hit her stone body, knocking her toward the door, I felt the scalpel in her hand stab deep into my left arm. My right palm smashed against her face, locking her jaw and blocking her airways. I used my grip on Rosalie's face to swing her body out so that I could land a solid kick in her gut. It was like kicking concrete. She flew into the doorframe, buckling one side of it. The little speaker in her ear crackled into pieces. Then Alice was there, yanking her by the throat to get her into the hall. And I had to give it to Blondie. She didn't put up an ounce of fight. She wanted us to win. She let me trash her like that to save Bella. Well, to save the thing. I ripped the blade out of my arm.
Alice, get her out of here! Edward shouted. Take her to Jasper and keep her there! Jacob, I need you!
I didn't watch Alice finish the job. I wheeled back to the operating table, where Bella was turning blue, her eyes wide and staring.
CPR?
Edward growled at me, fast and demanding.
Yes!
I judged his face swiftly, looking for any sign that he was going to react like Rosalie. There was nothing but single-minded ferocity.
Get her breathing! I've got to get him out before...
Another shattering crack inside her body, the loudest yet, so loud that we both froze in shock, waiting for her answering shriek. Nothing. Her legs, which had been curled up in agony, now went limp, sprawling out in an unnatural way.
Her spine!
He choked in horror.
Get it out of her!
I snarled, flinging the scalpel at him.
She won't feel anything now!
And then I bent over her head. Her mouth looked clear, so I pressed mine to hers and blew a lungful of air into it. I felt her twitching body expand, so there was nothing blocking her throat. Her lips tasted like blood. I could hear her heart thumping unevenly.
Keep it going,
I thought fiercely at her, blowing another gust of air into her body.
You promised! Keep your heart beating!
I heard the soft, wet sound of the scalpel across her stomach, more blood dripping to the floor. The next sound jolted through me, unexpected, terrifying, like metal being shredded apart. The sound brought back the fight in the clearing so many months ago, the tearing sound of the newborns being ripped apart. I glanced over to see Edward's face pressed against the bulge. Vampire teeth, a surefire way to cut through vampire skin. I shuddered as I blew more air into Bella. She coughed back at me, her eyes blinking, rolling blindly.
You stay with me now, Bella,
I yelled at her.
Do you hear me? Stay! You're not leaving me! Keep your heart beating!
Her eyes wheeled, looking for me, or him, but seeing nothing. I stared into them anyway, keeping my gaze locked there. And then her body was suddenly still under my hands, though her breathing picked up roughly, and her heart continued to thud. I realized the stillness meant that it was over. The internal beating was over. It must be out of her. It was. Edward whispered,
Renesmee.
So Belle had been wrong. It wasn't the boy she'd imagined. No big surprise there. What hadn't she been wrong about? I didn't look away from her red-spotted eyes, but I felt her hands lift weakly.
Let me,
she croaked in a broken whisper.
Give her to me.
I guess I should have known that he would always give her what she wanted, no matter how stupid her request might be. But I didn't dream he would listen to her now, so I didn't think to stop him. Something warm touched my arm. That right there should have caught my attention. Nothing felt warm to me. But I couldn't look away from Bella's face. She blinked and then stared, finally seeing something. She moaned out a strange, weak croon.
Renesmee, so beautiful.
And then she gasped in pain. By the time I looked, it was too late. Edward had snatched the warm, bloody thing out of her limp arms. My eyes flickered across her skin. It was red with blood, the blood that had flowed from her mouth, the blood smeared all over the creature, and fresh blood welling out of a tiny double crescent bite mark just over her left breast.
No, Renesmee,
Edward murmured, like he was teaching the monster manners. I didn't look at him or it. I watched only Bella as her eyes rolled back into her head. With a last dull galump, Her heart faltered and went silent. She missed maybe half of one beat, and then my hands were on her chest doing compressions. I counted in my head, trying to keep the rhythm steady. 1, 2, 3, 4. Breaking away for a second, I blew another lungful of air into her. I couldn't see anymore. My eyes were wet and blurry. But I was hyper-aware of the sounds in the room. The unwilling glug-glug of her heart under my demanding hands, the pounding of my own heart, and another, a fluttering beat that was too fast, too light. I couldn't place it. I forced more air down Bella's throat.
"What are you waiting for?"
I choked out breathlessly, pumping her heart again. 1, 2, 3, 4. "Take the baby," Edward said urgently.
"Throw it out the window." 1, 2, 3, 4.
"Give her to me,"
a low voice chimed from the doorway. Edward and I snarled at the same time.
1, 2, 3, 4.
"I've got it under control," Rosalie promised. "Give me the baby, Edward. I'll take care of her until Bella."
I breathed for Bella again while the exchange took place. The fluttering thumpa, thumpa, thumpa faded away with distance. "Move your hands, Jacob." I looked up from Bella's white eyes, still pumping her heart for her. Edward had a syringe in his hand, all silver, like it was made from steel.
"What's that?"
His stone hand knocked mine out of the way. There was a tiny crunch as his blow broke my little finger. In the same second, he shoved the needle straight into her heart.
"My venom,"
he answered, as he pushed the plunger down. I heard the jolt in her heart, like he'd shocked her with paddles.
"Keep it moving," he ordered.
His voice was ice, was dead, fierce and unthinking, like he was a machine. I ignored the healing ache in my finger and started pumping her heart again. It was harder, as if her blood was congealing there, thicker and slower. While I pushed the now viscous blood through her arteries, I watched what he was doing. It was like he was kissing her, brushing his lips at her throat, at her wrists, into the crease at the inside of her arm. But I could hear the lush tearing of her skin as his teeth bit through again and again, forcing venom into her system at as many points as possible. I saw his pale tongue sweep along the bleeding gashes, but before this could make me either sick or angry, I realized what he was doing. Where his tongue washed the venom over her skin, it sealed shut, holding the poison and the blood inside her body. I blew more air into her mouth, but there was nothing there, just the lifeless rise of her chest in response. I kept pumping her heart, counting, while he worked manically over her, trying to put her back together. All the king's horses and all the king's men. But there was nothing there. Just me, just him, working over a corpse. Because that's all that was left of the girl we both loved. This broken, bled-out, mangled corpse. We couldn't put Bella together again. I knew it was too late. I knew she was dead. I knew it for sure because the pull was gone. I didn't feel any reason to be here beside her. She wasn't here anymore. So this body had no more draw for me. The senseless need to be near her had vanished. Or maybe moved was the better word. It seemed like I felt the pull from the opposite direction now. From down the stairs, out the door. The longing to get away from here and never, ever come back.
"Go then,"
he snapped. And he hit my hands out of the way again, taking my place this time.
3 fingers broken, it felt like.
I straightened them numbly, not minding the throb of pain. He pushed her dead heart faster than I had.
"She's not dead," he growled. "She's going to be fine."
I wasn't sure he was talking to me anymore. Turning away, leaving him with his dead, I walked slowly to the door. So slowly, I couldn't make my feet move faster. This was it then. The ocean of pain. The other shore so far away across the boiling water that I couldn't imagine it, much less see it. I felt empty again, now that I'd lost my purpose. Saving Bella had been my fight for so long now, and she wouldn't be saved. She'd willingly sacrificed herself to be torn apart by that monster's young, and so the fight was lost. It was all over. I shuddered at the sound coming from behind me as I plodded down the stairs, the sound of a dead heart being forced to thud. I wanted to somehow pour bleach inside my head and let it fry my brain, to burn away the images left from Bella's final minutes. I'd take the brain damage if I could get rid of that. The screaming, the bleeding, the unbearable crunching and snapping as the newborn monster tore through her from the inside out. I wanted to sprint away, to take the stairs 10 at a time and race out the door, but my feet were heavy as iron, and my body was more tired than it had ever been before. I shuffled down the stairs like a crippled old man. I rested at the bottom step, gathering my strength to get out the door. Rosalie was on the clean end of the white sofa, her back to me, cooing and murmuring to the blanket-wrapped thing in her arms. She must have heard me pause, but she ignored me, caught up in her moment of stolen motherhood. Maybe she would be happy now. Rosalie had what she wanted, and Bella would never come to take the creature from her. I wondered if that's what the poisonous blonde had been hoping for all along. She held something dark in her hands, and there was a greedy sucking sound coming from the tiny murderer she held. The scent of blood in the air. Human blood. Rosalie was feeding it. Of course it would want blood. What else would you feed the kind of monster that would brutally mutilate its own mother? It might as well have been drinking Bella's blood. Maybe it was. My strength came back to me as I listened to the sound of the little executioner feeding. Strength and hate and heat. Red heat washing through my head, burning but erasing nothing. The images in my head were fuel, building up the inferno but refusing to be consumed. I felt the tremors rock me from head to toe, and I did not try to stop them. Rosalie was totally absorbed in the creature, paying no attention to me at all. She wouldn't be quick enough to stop me, distracted as she was. Sam had been right. The thing was an aberration. Its existence went against nature. A black, soulless demon. Something that had no right to be. Something that had to be destroyed. It seemed like the pull had not been leading to the door after all. I could feel it now, encouraging me, tugging me forward, pushing me to finish this, to cleanse the world of this abomination. Rosalie would try to kill me when the creature was dead, and I would fight back. I wasn't sure if I would have time to finish her before the others came to help. Maybe, maybe not. I didn't much care either way. I didn't care if the wolves, either set, avenged me or called the Cullens' justice fair. None of that mattered. All I cared about was my own justice, my revenge. The thing that had killed Bella would not live another minute longer. If Bella'd survived, she would have hated me for this. She would have wanted to kill me personally. But I didn't care. She didn't care what she had done to me, letting herself be slaughtered like an animal. Why should I take her feelings into account? And then there was Edward. He must be too busy now, too far gone in his insane denial, trying to reanimate a corpse, to listen to my plans. So I wouldn't get the chance to keep my promise to him. Unless, and it was not a wager I'd put money on, I managed to win the fight against Rosalie, Jasper, and Alice 3-on-1. But even if I did win, I didn't think I had it in me to kill Edward. Because I didn't have enough compassion for that. Why should I let him get away from what he'd done? Wouldn't it be more fair, more satisfying, to let him live with nothing, nothing at all? It made me almost smile, as filled with hate as I was, to imagine it. No Bella, no killer spawn, and also missing as many members of his family as I was able to take down. Of course, he could probably put those back together, since I wouldn't be around to burn them. Unlike Bella, who would never be whole again. I wondered if the creature could be put back together. I doubted it. It was part Bella, too, so it must have inherited some of her vulnerability. I could hear that in the tiny, thrumming beat of its heart. Its heart was beating. Hers wasn't. Only a second had passed as I made these easy decisions. The trembling was getting tighter and faster. I coiled myself, preparing to spring at the blonde vampire and rip the murderous thing from her arms with my teeth. Rosalie cooed at the creature again, setting the empty metal bottle thing aside and lifting the creature into the air to nuzzle her face against its cheek. Perfect. The new position was perfect for my strike. I leaned forward and felt the heat begin to change me while the pull toward the killer grew. It was stronger than I'd ever felt it before. So strong it reminded me of an alpha's command, like it would crush me if I didn't obey. This time, I wanted to obey. The murderer stared past Rosalie's shoulder at me, its gaze more focused than any newborn creature's gaze should be. Warm brown eyes, the color of milk chocolate, the exact same color that Bella's had been. My shaking jerked to a stop. Heat flooded through me, stronger than before, but it was a new kind of heat, not a burning. It was a glowing. Everything inside me came undone as I stared at the tiny porcelain face of the half-vampire, half-human baby. All the lines that held me to my life were sliced apart in swift cuts, like clipping the strings to a bunch of balloons. Everything that made me who I was, my love for the dead girl upstairs, my love for my father, my loyalty to my new pack, the love for my other brothers, my hatred for my enemies, my home, my name, myself, disconnected from me in that second, snip, 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 and floated up into space. I was not left drifting. A new string held me where I was. Not one string, but a million. Not strings, but steel cables. A million steel cables all tying me to one thing, to the very center of the universe. I could see that now, how the universe swirled around this one point. I'd never seen the symmetry of the universe before, but now it was plain. The gravity of the Earth no longer tied me to the place where I stood. It was the baby girl in the blonde vampire's arms that held me here now. Renesmee. From upstairs, there was a new sound. The only sound that could touch me in this endless instant. A frantic pounding, a racing beat, a changing heart.
Book 3. Bella. Personal affection is a luxury you can have only after all your enemies are eliminated. Until then, everyone you love is a hostage, sapping your courage and corrupting your judgment. Orson Scott Card, Empire. Preface. No longer just a nightmare? The line of black advanced on us through the icy mist stirred up by their feet. We're going to die, I thought in panic. I was desperate for the precious one I guarded, but even to think of that was a lapse in attention I could not afford. They ghosted closer, their dark robes billowing slightly with the movement. I saw their hands curl into bone-colored claws. They drifted apart, angling to come at us from all sides. We were outnumbered. It was over. And then, like a burst of light from a flash, the whole scene was different. Yet nothing changed. The Volturi still stalked toward us, poised to kill. All that really changed was how the picture looked to me. Suddenly, I was hungry for it. I wanted them to charge. The panic changed to bloodlust as I crouched forward, a smile on my face, and a growl ripped through my bared teeth. Chapter 19. Burning. The pain was bewildering. Exactly that. I was bewildered. I couldn't understand, couldn't make sense of what was happening. My body tried to reject the pain, and I was sucked again and again into a blackness that cut out whole seconds or maybe even minutes of the agony, making it that much harder to keep up with reality. I tried to separate them. Non-reality was black, and it didn't hurt so much. Reality was red, and it felt like I was being sawed in half, hit by a bus, punched by a prize fighter, trampled by bulls, and submerged in acid, all at the same time. Reality was feeling my body twist and flip when I couldn't possibly move because of the pain. Reality was knowing there was something so much more important than all this torture, and not being able to remember what it was. Reality had come on so fast. One moment, everything was as it should have been, surrounded by people I loved. Smiles. Somehow, unlikely as it was, it seemed like I was about to get everything I'd been fighting for. And then, one tiny, inconsequential thing had gone wrong. I'd watched as my cup tilted, dark blood spilling out and staining the perfect white, and I'd lurched toward the accident reflexively. I'd seen the other, faster hands, but my body had continued to reach, to stretch. Inside me, something had yanked the opposite direction. Ripping, breaking, agony. The darkness had taken over and then washed away to a wave of torture. I couldn't breathe. I had drowned once before, and this was different. It was too hot in my throat. Pieces of me shattering, snapping, slicing apart. More blackness. Voices this time, shouting as the pain came back. The placenta must have detached. Something sharper than knives ripped through me. The words, making sense in spite of the other tortures. Detached placenta. I knew what that meant. It meant that my baby was dying inside me. Get him out! I screamed to Edward. Why hadn't he done it yet? He can't breathe. Do it now. The morphine. He wanted to wait to give me painkillers while our baby was dying? No, now! I choked, unable to finish. Black spots covered the light in the room as a cold point of new pain stabbed icily into my stomach. It felt wrong. I struggled automatically to protect my womb, my baby, my little Edward Jacob. But I was weak. My lungs ached. Oxygen burned away. The pain faded away again, though I clung to it now. My baby dying? How long had passed? Seconds or minutes? The pain was gone, numb. I couldn't feel, I still couldn't see either, but I could hear. There was air in my lungs again, scraping in rough bubbles up and down my throat. You stay with me now, Bella. Do you hear me? Stay. You're not leaving me. Keep your heart beating. Jacob? Jacob's still here? Still trying to save me? Of course, I wanted to tell him. Of course I would keep my heart beating. Hadn't I promised them both? I tried to feel my heart, to find it, but I was so lost inside my own body. I couldn't feel the things I should, and nothing felt in the right place. I blinked, and I found my eyes. I could see the light. Not what I was looking for, but better than nothing. As my eyes struggled to adjust, Edward whispered, Renesmee. Renesmee? Not the pale and perfect son of my imagination? I felt a moment of shock, and then a flood of warmth. Renesmee. I willed my lips to move, willed the bubbles of air to turn into whispers on my tongue. I forced my numb hands to reach. Let me give her to me. The light danced, shattering off Edward's crystal hands. The sparkles were tinged with red, with the blood that covered his skin, and more red in his hands. Something small and struggling, dripping with blood. He touched the warm body to my weak arms, almost like I was holding her. Her wet skin was hot as Jacob's. My eyes focused. Suddenly everything was absolutely clear. Renesmee did not cry, but she breathed in quick, startled pants. Her eyes were open, her expression so shocked it was almost funny. The little perfectly round head was covered in a thick layer of matted bloody curls. Her irises were a familiar but astonishing chocolate brown. Under the blood, her skin looked pale, a creamy ivory. All besides her cheeks, which flamed with color. Her tiny face was so absolutely perfect that it stunned me. She was even more beautiful than her father. Unbelievable. Impossible. Renesmee, I whispered. So beautiful. The impossible face suddenly smiled. A wide, deliberate smile. Behind the shell-pink lips was a full complement of snowy milk teeth. She leaned her head down against my chest, burrowing against the warmth. Her skin was warm and silky, but it didn't give the way mine did. Then there was pain again, just one warm slash of it. I gasped. And she was gone. My angel-faced baby was nowhere. I couldn't see or feel her. No! I wanted to shout. Give her back to me! But the weakness was too much. My arms felt like empty rubber hoses for a moment, and then they felt like nothing at all. I couldn't feel them. I couldn't feel me. The blackness rushed over my eyes more solidly than before, like a thick blindfold, firm and fast, covering not just my eyes but also myself with a crushing weight. It was exhausting to push against it. I knew it would be so much easier to give in, to let the blackness push me down, down, down to a place where there was no pain and no weariness and no worry and no fear. If it had only been for myself, I wouldn't have been able to struggle very long. I was only human, with no more than human strength. I'd been trying to keep up with the supernatural for too long, like Jacob had said, but this wasn't just about me. If I did the easy thing now, let the black nothingness erase me, I would hurt them. Edward. Edward. My life and his were twisted into a single strand. Cut one, and you cut both. If he were gone, I would not be able to live through that. If I were gone, he wouldn't live through it either. And a world without Edward seemed completely pointless. Edward had to exist. Jacob, who'd said goodbye to me over and over but kept coming back when I needed him. Jacob, who I'd wounded so many times it was criminal. When I hurt him again, the worst way yet. He'd stayed for me despite everything. Now all he asked was that I stay for him. But it was so dark here that I couldn't see either of their faces. Nothing seemed real. That made it hard not to give up. I kept pushing against the black, though, almost a reflex. I wasn't trying to lift it, I was just resisting, not allowing it to crush me completely. I wasn't Atlas, and the black felt as heavy as a planet. I couldn't shoulder it. All I could do was not be entirely obliterated. It was sort of the pattern to my life. I'd never been strong enough to deal with the things outside my control, to attack the enemies or outrun them, to avoid the pain, always human and weak. The only thing I'd ever been able to do was keep going, endure, survive. It had been enough up to this point. It would have to be enough today. I would endure this until help came. I knew Edward would be doing everything he could. He would not give up. Neither would I. I held the blackness of non-existence at bay by inches. It wasn't enough, though, that determination. As the time ground on and the darkness gained by tiny eighths and sixteenths of my inches, I needed something more to draw strength from. I couldn't pull even Edward's face into view, not Jacob's, not Alice's or Rosalie's, or Charlie's or Renee's, or Carlisle's or Esme's. Nothing. It terrified me, and I wondered if it was too late. I felt myself slipping. There was nothing to hold on to. No, I had to survive this. Edward was depending on me. Jacob, Charlie, Alice, Rosalie, Carlisle, Renee, Esme, Renesmee. And then, though I still couldn't see anything, suddenly I could feel something, like phantom limbs. I imagined I could feel my arms again, and in them something small and hard, and very, very warm. My baby. My little nudger. I had done it. Against the odds, I had been strong enough to survive Renesmee, to hold on to her until she was strong enough to live without me. That spot of heat in my phantom arms felt so real. I clutched it closer. It was exactly where my heart should be, holding tight the warm memory of my daughter. I knew that I would be able to fight the darkness as long as I needed to. The warmth beside my heart got more and more real, warmer and warmer, hotter. The heat was so real it was hard to believe that I was imagining it. Hotter. Uncomfortable now. Too hot. Much, much too hot. Like grabbing the wrong end of a curling iron, my automatic response was to drop the scorching thing in my arms. But there was nothing in my arms. My arms were not curled to my chest. My arms were dead things lying somewhere at my side. The heat was inside me. The burning grew, rose and peaked and rose again until it surpassed anything I'd ever felt. I felt the pulse behind the fire raging now in my chest and realized that I'd found my heart again, just in time to wish I never had, to wish that I'd embraced the blackness while I'd still had the chance. I wanted to raise my arms and claw my chest open and rip the heart from it, anything to get rid of this torture. But I couldn't feel my arms, couldn't move one vanished finger. James snapping my leg under his foot, that was nothing. That was a soft place to rest on a feather bed. I'd take that now 100 times. 100 snaps. I'd take it and be grateful. The baby kicking my ribs apart, breaking her way through me piece by piece. That was nothing. That was floating in a pool of cool water. I'd take it 1,000 times. Take it and be grateful. The fire blazed hotter and I wanted to scream, to beg for someone to kill me now, before I lived one more second in this pain. But I couldn't move my lips. The weight was still there, pressing on me. I realized it wasn't the darkness holding me down. It was my body, so heavy, burying me in the flames that were chewing their way out from my heart now, spreading with impossible pain through my shoulders and stomach, scalding their way up my throat, licking at my face. Why couldn't I move? Why couldn't I scream? This wasn't part of the stories. My mind was unbearably clear, sharpened by the fierce pain, and I saw the answer almost as soon as I could form the questions. The morphine. It seemed like 1,000,000 deaths ago that we'd discussed it, Edward, Carlyle, and I. Edward and Carlyle had hoped that enough painkillers would help fight the pain of the venom. Carlyle had tried with Emmett, but the venom had burned ahead of the medicine, sealing his veins. There hadn't been time for it to spread. I'd kept my face smooth and nodded and thanked my rarely lucky stars that Edward could not read my mind. Because I'd had morphine and venom together in my system before, and I knew the truth. I knew the numbness of the medicine was completely irrelevant while the venom seared through my veins. But there'd been no way I was going to mention that fact. Nothing that would make him more unwilling to change me. I hadn't guessed that the morphine would have this effect, that it would pin me down and gag me, hold me paralyzed while I burned. I knew all the stories. I knew that Carlyle had kept quiet enough to avoid discovery while he burned. I knew that according to Rosalie, it did no good to scream. And I'd hoped that maybe I could be like Carlyle, that I would believe Rosalie's words and keep my mouth shut, because I knew that every scream that escaped my lips would torment Edward. Now it seemed like a hideous joke that I was getting my wish fulfilled. If I couldn't scream, how could I tell them to kill me? All I wanted was to die, to never have been born. The whole of my existence did not outweigh this pain. Wasn't worth living through it for one more heartbeat. Let me die, let me die, let me die. And for a never-ending space, that was all there was. Just the fiery torture and my soundless shrieks pleading for death to come. Nothing else, not even time. So that made it infinite, with no beginning and no end. One infinite moment of pain. The only change came when suddenly, impossibly, my pain was doubled. The lower half of my body, deadened since before the morphine, was suddenly on fire too. Some broken connection had been healed, knitted together by the scorching fingers of the flame. The endless burn raged on. It could have been seconds or days, weeks or years, but eventually, time came to mean something again. Three things happened together, grew from each other so that I didn't know which came first. Time restarted, the morphine's weight faded, and I got stronger. I could feel the control of my body come back to me in increments. And those increments were my first markers of the time passing. I knew it when I was able to twitch my toes and twist my fingers into fists. I knew it, but I did not act on it. Though the fire did not decrease one tiny degree, in fact, I began to develop a new capacity for experiencing it, a new sensitivity to appreciate, separately, each blistering tongue of flame that licked through my veins. I discovered that I could think around it. I could remember why I shouldn't scream. I could remember the reason why I'd committed to enduring this unendurable agony. I could remember that, though it felt impossible now, there was something that might be worth the torture. This happened just in time for me to hold on when the weights left my body. To anyone watching me, there would be no change. But for me, as I struggled to keep the screams and thrashing locked up inside my body where they couldn't hurt anyone else, it felt like I'd gone from being tied to the stake as I burned to gripping that stake to hold myself in the fire. I had just enough strength to lie there unmoving while I was charred alive. My hearing got clearer and clearer, and I could count the frantic, pounding beats of my heart to mark the time. I could count the shallow breaths that gasped through my teeth. I could count the low, even breaths that came from somewhere close beside me. These moved slowest, so I concentrated on them. They meant the most time passing, more even than a clock's pendulum. Those breaths pulled me through the burning seconds toward the end. I continued to get stronger, my thoughts clearer. When new noises came, I could listen. There were light footsteps, the whisper of air stirred by an opening door. The footsteps got closer, and I felt pressure against the inside of my wrist. I couldn't feel the coolness of the fingers. The fire blistered away every memory of cool. Still no change? None. The lightest pressure, breath against my scorched skin. There's no scent of the morphine left. I know. Bella, can you hear me? I knew, beyond all doubt, that if I unlocked my teeth, I would lose it. I would shriek and screech and writhe and thrash. If I opened my eyes, if I so much as twitched a finger, any change at all would be the end of my control. Bella, Bella, love, can you open your eyes? Can you squeeze my hand? Pressure on my fingers. It was harder not to answer this voice, but I stayed paralyzed. I knew that the pain in his voice now was nothing compared to what it could be. Right now, he only feared that I was suffering. Maybe, Carlisle, maybe I was too late. His voice was muffled. It broke on the word late. My resolve wavered for a second. Listen to her heart, Edward. It's stronger than even Emmett's was. I've never heard anything so vital. She'll be perfect. Yes, I was right to keep quiet. Carla would reassure him. He didn't need to suffer with me. And her spine. Her injuries weren't so much worse than Esme's. The venom will heal her, as it did Esme. But she's so still. I must have done something wrong. Or something right, Edward. Son, you did everything I could have and more. I'm not sure I would have had the persistence, the faith it took to save her. Stop berating yourself. Bella is going to be fine. A broken whisper. She must be in agony. We don't know that. She had so much morphine in her system. We don't know the effect that will have on her experience. Faint pressure inside the crease of my elbow. Another whisper. Bella, I love you. Bella, I'm sorry. I wanted so much to answer him, but I wouldn't make his pain worse. Not while I had the strength to hold myself still. Through all this, the racking fire went right on burning me. But there was so much space in my head now. Room to ponder their conversation. Room to remember what had happened. Room to look ahead to the future, with still endless room left over to suffer in. Also room to worry. Where was my baby? Why wasn't she here? Why weren't they talking about her? No, I'm staying right here, Edward whispered, answering an unspoken thought. They'll sort it out. An interesting situation, Carlyle responded, and I thought I'd seen just about everything. I'll deal with it later. We'll deal with it. Something pressed softly to my blistering palm. I'm sure between the five of us we can keep it from turning into bloodshed. Edward sighed. I don't know which side to take. I'd love to flog them both. Well, later. I wonder what Bella will think. Whose side she'll take, Carlyle mused. One low, strained chuckle. I'm sure she'll surprise me. She always does. Carlyle's footsteps faded away again, and I was frustrated that there was no further explanation. Were they talking so mysteriously just to annoy me? I went back to counting Edward's breaths to mark the time. 10,943 breaths later, a different set of footsteps whispered into the room. Lighter, more rhythmic. Strange that I could distinguish the minute differences between footsteps that I'd never been able to hear at all before today. How much longer? Edward asked. It won't be long now, Alice told him. See how clear she's becoming? I can see her so much better, she sighed. Still feeling a little bitter? Yes, thanks so much for bringing it up, she grumbled. You would be mortified, too, if you realized that you were handcuffed by your own nature. I see vampires best, because I am one. I see humans okay, because I was one. But I can't see these odd half-breeds at all because they're nothing I've experienced. Bah! Focus, Alice. Right. Bella's almost too easy to see now. There was a long moment of silence, and then Edward sighed. It was a new sound, happier. She's really going to be fine, he breathed. Of course she is. You weren't so sanguine 2 days ago. I couldn't see right 2 days ago, but now that she's free of all the blind spots, it's a piece of cake. Could you concentrate for me? On the clock, give me an estimate. Alice sighed. So impatient. Fine. Give me a sec. Quiet breathing. Thank you, Alice. His voice was brighter. How long? Couldn't they at least say it aloud for me? Was that too much to ask? How many more seconds would I burn? 10,000? 20? Another day? 86,400? More than that? She's going to be dazzling. Edward growled quietly. She always has been. Alice snorted. You know what I mean. Look at her. Edward didn't answer, but Alice's words gave me hope that maybe I didn't resemble the charcoal briquette I felt like. It seemed as if I must be just a pile of charred bones by now. Every cell in my body had been raised to ash. I heard Alice breeze out of the room. I heard the swish of the fabric she moved, rubbing against itself. I heard the quiet buzz of the light hanging from the ceiling. I heard the faint wind brushing against the outside of the house. I could hear everything. Downstairs, someone was watching a ball game. The Mariners were winning by 2 runs. It's my turn, I heard Rosalie snap at someone, and there was a low snarl in response. Hey now, Emmett cautioned. Someone hissed. I listened for more, but there was nothing but the game. Baseball was not interesting enough to distract me from the pain, so I listened to Edward's breathing again, counting the seconds. 21,917 and a half seconds later, the pain changed. On the good news side of things, it started to fade from my fingertips and toes, fading slowly, but at least it was doing something new. This had to be it. The pain was on its way out. And then the bad news. The fire in my throat wasn't the same as before. I wasn't only on fire, but I was now parched too. Dry as bone. So thirsty. Burning fire and burning thirst. Also bad news. The fire inside my heart got hotter. How's that possible? My heartbeat, already too fast, picked up. The fire drove its rhythm to a new frantic pace. Carlyle? Edward called. His voice was low but clear. I knew that Carlyle would hear it if he were in or near the house. The fire retreated from my palms, leaving them blissfully pain-free and cool. But it retreated to my heart, which blazed hot as the sun and beat at a furious new speed. Carlyle entered the room, Alice at his side. Their footsteps were so distinct. I could even tell that Carlyle was on the right and a foot ahead of Alice. Listen, Edward told them. The loudest sound in the room was my frenzied heart, pounding to the rhythm of the fire. Ah, Carlyle said, it's almost over. My relief at his words was overshadowed by the excruciating pain in my heart. My wrists were free, though, and my ankles. The fire was totally extinguished there. Soon, Alice agreed eagerly. I'll get the others. Should I have Rosalie? Yes, keep the baby away. What? No. What did he mean, keep my baby away? What was he thinking? My fingers twitched, the irritation breaking through my perfect facade. The room went silent besides the jackhammering of my heart as they all stopped breathing for a second in response. A hand squeezed my wayward fingers. Bella? Bella, love? Could I answer him without screaming? I considered that for a moment, and then the fire ripped hotter still through my chest, draining in from my elbows and knees. Better not to chance it. I'll bring them right up, Alice said, an urgent edge to her tone, and I heard the swish of wind as she darted away. And then, oh! My heart took off, beating like helicopter blades, the sound almost a single sustained note. It felt like it would grind through my ribs. The fire flared up in the center of my chest, sucking the last remnants of the flames from the rest of my body to fuel the most scorching blaze yet. The pain was enough to stun me, to break through my iron grip on the stake. My back arched, bowed as if the fire was dragging me upward by my heart. I allowed no other piece of my body to break rank as my torso slumped back to the table. It became a battle inside me, my sprinting heart racing against the attacking fire. Both were losing. The fire was doomed. Having consumed everything that was combustible, my heart galloped toward its last beat. The fire constricted, concentrating inside that one remaining human organ with a final, unbearable surge. The surge was answered by a deep, hollow-sounding thud. My heart stuttered twice, and then thudded quietly again just once more. There was no sound, no breathing, not even mine. For a moment, the absence of pain was all I could comprehend. And then I opened my eyes and gazed above me in wonder. Chapter 20. New. Everything was so clear, sharp, defined. The brilliant light overhead was still blinding bright, and yet I could plainly see the glowing strands of the filaments inside the bulb. I could see each color of the rainbow in the white light, and at the very edge of the spectrum, an eighth color I had no name for. Behind the light, I could distinguish the individual grains in the dark wood ceiling above. In front of it, I could see the dust motes in the air, the sides the light touched, and the dark sides, distinct and separate. They spun like little planets, moving around each other in a celestial dance. The dust was so beautiful that I inhaled in shock. The air whistled down my throat, swirling the motes into a vortex. The action felt wrong. I considered and realized the problem was that there was no relief tied to the action. I didn't need the air. My lungs weren't waiting for it. They reacted indifferently to the influx. I did not need the air, but I liked it. In it, I could taste the room around me, taste the lovely dust motes, the mix of the stagnant air mingling with the flow of slightly cooler air from the open door, taste a lush whiff of silk, taste a faint hint of something warm and desirable, something that should be moist but wasn't. That smell made my throat burn dryly. A faint echo of the venom burn, though the scent was tainted by the bite of chlorine and ammonia. And most of all, I could taste an almost honey, lilac, and sun-flavored scent. That was the strongest thing, the closest thing to me. I heard the sound of the others, breathing again now that I did. Their breath mixed with the scent that was something just off honey and lilac and sunshine, bringing new flavors. Cinnamon, hyacinth, pear, seawater, rising bread, pine, vanilla, leather, apple, moss, lavender, chocolate. I traded a dozen different comparisons in my mind, but none of them fit exactly. So sweet and pleasant. The TV downstairs had been muted, and I heard someone, Rosalie, shift her weight on the first floor. I also heard a faint thudding rhythm with a voice shouting angrily to the beat. Rap music? I was mystified for a moment, and then the sound faded away like a car passing by with the windows rolled down. With a start, I realized that this could be exactly right. Could I hear all the way to the freeway? I didn't realize someone was holding my hand until whoever it was squeezed it lightly, like it had before to hide the pain. My body locked down again in surprise. This was not a touch I expected. The skin was perfectly smooth, but it was the wrong temperature, not cold. After that first frozen second of shock, my body responded to the unfamiliar touch in a way that shocked me even more. Air hissed up my throat, spitting through my clenched teeth with a low, menacing sound like a swarm of bees. Before the sound was out, my muscles bunched and arched, twisting away from the unknown. I flipped off my back in a spin so fast it should have turned the room into an incomprehensible blur. But it did not. I saw every dust mote, every splinter in the wood-paneled walls, every loose thread in microscopic detail as my eyes whirled past them. So by the time I found myself crouched against the wall defensively, about a 16th of a second later, I already understood what had startled me and that I had overreacted. Oh, of course. Edward wouldn't feel cold to me. We were the same temperature now. I held my pose for an eighth of a second longer, adjusting to the scene before me. Edward was leaning across the operating table that had been my pyre. His hand reached out toward me, his expression anxious. Edward's face was the most important thing, but my peripheral vision cataloged everything else just in case. Some instinct to defend had been triggered, and I automatically searched for any sign of danger. My vampire family waited cautiously against the far wall by the door, Emmett and Jasper in the front, like there was danger. My nostrils flared, searching for the threat. I could smell nothing out of place. That faint scent of something delicious, but marred by harsh chemicals, tickled my throat again, setting it to aching and burning. Alice was peeking around Jasper's elbow with a huge grin on her face. The light sparkled off her teeth, another eight-color rainbow. That grin reassured me and then put the pieces together. Jasper and Emmett were in the front to protect the others, as I had assumed. What I hadn't grasped immediately was that I was the danger. All this was a sideline. The greater part of my senses and my mind were still focused on Edward's face. I had never seen it before this second. How many times had I stared at Edward and marveled over his beauty? How many hours, days, weeks of my life had I spent dreaming about what I then deemed to be perfection? I thought I'd known his face better than my own. I'd thought this was the one sure physical thing in my whole world, the flawlessness of Edward's face. I may as well have been blind. For the first time, with the dimming shadows and limiting weakness of humanity taken off my eyes, I saw his face. I gasped and then struggled with my vocabulary, unable to find the right words. I needed better words. At this point, the other part of my attention had ascertained that there was no danger here besides myself, and I automatically straightened out of my crouch. Almost a whole second had passed since I'd been on the table. I was momentarily preoccupied by the way my body moved. The instant I'd consider standing erect, I was already straight. There was no brief fragment of time in which the action occurred. Change was instantaneous, almost as if there was no movement at all. I continued to stare at Edward's face, motionless again. He moved slowly around the table, each step taking nearly half a second, each step flowing sinuously like river water weaving over smooth stones, his hands still outstretched. I watched the grace of his advance, absorbing it with my new eyes. "Bella?" he asked in a low, calming tone, but the worry in his voice layered my name with tension. I could not answer immediately, lost as I was in the velvet folds of his voice. It was the most perfect symphony, a symphony in one instrument, an instrument more profound than any created by man. "Bella, love, I'm sorry. I know it's disorienting, but you're all right. Everything is fine." Everything? My mind spun out, spiraling back to my last human hour. Already the memory seemed dim, like I was watching through a thick, dark veil, because my human eyes had been half blind. Everything had been so blurred. When he said everything was fine, did that include Renesmee? Where was she? With Rosalie? I tried to remember her face. I knew that she had been beautiful, but it was irritating to try to see through the human memories. Her face was shrouded in darkness, so poorly lit. What about Jacob? Was he fine? Did my long-suffering best friend hate me now? Had he gone back to Sam's pack? Seth and Leah, too? Were the Cullens safe, or had my transformation ignited the war with the pack? Did Edward's blanket assurance cover all of that? Or was he just trying to calm me? And Charlie, what would I tell him now? He must have called while I was burning. What had they told him? What did he think had happened to me? As I deliberated for one small piece of a second over which question to ask first, Edward reached out tentatively and stroked his fingertips across my cheek. Smooth as satin, soft as a feather, and now exactly matched to the temperature of my skin. His touch seemed to sweep beneath the surface of my skin, right through the bones of my face. The feeling was tingly, electric. It jolted through my bones, down my spine, and trembled in my stomach.